Hello, it's great to have you with me. I'm Kim Clyden, former ABC radio presenter and children's book author, creating a community of people who care about children. How do we nurture creative, connected, resilient, emotionally intelligent, and empowered children? And they say it takes a village. So if you're feeling overwhelmed by the responsibility, you're not alone. We're surrounded, though, by people who can support us, your family, friends, and professionals, who all play an influential role in shaping our children. Imagine if your parents, teachers, relatives, or carers told you another story. Your life story would be completely different. I believe we can change the narrative for our children, but to do that, we need to change our story. Gaming prevalence among young children in Australia is growing, with high usage rates, particularly for video games, where 93% of 5 to 14-year-olds play regularly and nearly half of 8 to 17-year-olds play online multiplayer games. Concerns around addiction, in-game bullying, predators, and excessive screen time exist. However, there are benefits for our digital generations if we ensure protections and oversee game choices. That's in the opinion of Brett Azzopardi, co-founder and managing director of Shape IT. Brett's journey with technology started in his teenage years, not with the sleek devices we know today, but an old IBM 486, retro by today's gaming standards. That early curiosity with computers grew into a career and ultimately the creation of his own IT solutions company. Brett's seen technology from every angle, its power to transform, its risks, and the impact on our social lives. He believes the key isn't just using tech, it's teaching children to think critically and responsibly as AI becomes part of their world. Brett, how have you been able to leverage those early experiences and build a career?
Yeah, look, my career was a little bit different, I think, than a lot of others. I didn't know what I wanted to do when I left high school. So I took a bit of a gap year and just tried some door-to-door sales, a bunch of different things, and wasn't really satisfied with any of them. So I ended up joining the Defence Force, the Australian Navy, thinking that I could get paid to learn. And yeah, I sort of evolved from there. I spent, nearly a decade in the Navy learning my technical trade, electronics. So my primary role was looking after the communication systems on board some of the frigates. And when I left, I just sort of organically fell into IT, to be honest. It's just an easy move.
I've noticed there's been a big swing towards a very negative space around gaming. However, what do you see are the positives of what gaming can teach our children?
Yeah, that's a good one. Look, I think gaming, whilst in itself can be addictive and detrimental, I guess, to a child's mind and their growth set if they spend too much time on it. From a positive perspective, providing you keep that in control and you're aware of what they're doing and what they're playing, they can actually learn quite a bit from it. That whether it be, just hand-eye coordination, whether it be some learning that's actually built into those games. So providing you find the right style of game, it can have a positive.
Given your connection with internet and technology now, how are you introducing technology for your children?
Yeah, that's a good one. So my kids are a little bit younger. Mine are 5 and 7. So technology for them, we still keep pretty limited. We use parent-supervised reading eggs. One of the sort of educational programs is about all they sort of get to do on a tablet. Neither have a phone, and I have no intention to provide them that for years to come yet. And obviously on the television, we try and limit their time and exposure on that as well. But thankfully, a lot of those subscription-based apps like your Netflix or Disney have built-in parental controls these days. So the reality is, as long as you have a profile for them, you can be pretty comfortable with what they're watching.
How would you advise other parents get to know, you know, those backlinks in being able to protect their children? I mean, a lot of us are pretty unaware when it comes to those settings and don't take enough time to get to know the system.
Yeah, well, I mean, we didn't have it growing up, right? As kids ourselves, our parents weren't worried about it or aware of everything that happens online. The online wasn't such a big thing. And now with all, you know, the way that's a primary mechanism that predators use, online profiles and stuff. So it's a very real issue and very relevant. I think my suggestion to any parent that's concerned about what their child's doing online is to have a look at some of the government posted stuff. So the eSafety Commissioner has a great bunch of resources around parental controls in the home and outside, because it's not only in the home. It's easier to manage what they're doing in the home. Outside's a bit different, right? You can't control them sitting with a friend on a mobile phone or something like that and what they could see there.
What sort of conversations do you have with your children? I know they're only 5 and 7. However, that's old enough to be exposed to a whole heap of technology. You know, what are you modelling?
Yeah, that's an interesting question as well. I think for my kids, I'm trying to demonstrate the positive aspects of technology, because both myself and my wife work on computers, you know, 100%. So that's our day job. We can't avoid technology, and I don't think we should. It's more, you know, they are at an age where I'm not talking to them about the dangers so much, but more trying to make it inclusive so it's not something that they see as a big target. You know, well, we're not allowed to use this, so that makes me want to go and grab it more. That's not the position I want to set for my kids. I want them to understand technology and be fluent with it.
I think that's the best way. In fact, I agree 100%. And it's why I've decided to use my digital media experience in helping children understand, you know, the benefits of embracing technology. They can't avoid it, Brett. And as someone who's in the industry and utilizing it, how important is it that we set our children up with as much information and try to prevent any misinformation or inability to operate online right now, starting from kids your age?
Well, I think the government has done a sensational job with the social media ban that's coming in shortly for those under 16. I think that is one of the better law changes I've seen in recent years. Kids are far too impressionable to be on social media below that. They're not ready to handle that. So I think government's starting that, but, you know, the government can only push so far. Parents have to ensure that they engage with their kids about it. I mean, technology is only advancing. AI is going to continue to build that up. Workforce is going to change between now and when most of our kids that are in primary school and younger are entering the workforce. They're going to have no choice but to be technology fluid. They're going to need to be able to control what they're doing and understand it.
What sort of impact is AI having on your IT business right now, and how have you maybe had to reposition yourself in that space?
It's having a remarkable impact on my business, to be honest. As a small business owner, there's only so much that, you know, my business partner and I can handle. We're two people. However, we can leverage AI a lot in our space to help with streamlining a lot of work, even just simple punctuation and grammar checking. Like, for something like that, it's absolutely ideal. But it's something that people still need to be mindful of. When I use AI, I always think about the fact that that data that I'm entering in is going to sit somewhere, and it's going to be used and read against. So I try and keep the personal aspect away from it personally. That's just my feel for securing myself in that space.
I've noticed that it's increased exponentially in the last even 12 months, like since they've released newer versions. It is learning at an unprecedented rate. Does that alarm you at all in any way about how it's going to replace people in the workforce?
Yeah, it absolutely does, Kim. You know, I would like to say I'm a bit of an early adopter as far as anything technology, AI inclusive. I've been playing around with it for a few years, and like you said, it has absolutely increased exponentially. Unfortunately, I think we're starting to see the early stages of businesses realizing that AI can replace some of their workforce. Salesforce is a recent example. They let go of nearly 4,000 people. I think that's pretty much half of the people in their business. For me, it's not so much, I guess I don't want to be, I wouldn't want to scare people around the use of AI. It's finding out how to leverage AI that's going to make you and keep you relevant in today's society.
It's actually helped me a lot in the last 12 months because there's been a lot of change. Since COVID, nothing sort of seems certain, and there's been a lot of fluctuations in markets, in instability. I mean, there's so much that's impacted by global forces, including leadership and war. How do you think we should be fortifying ourselves in the business space, and what sort of impact are those types of things having on you currently?
Great question. From a business perspective, I mean, you don't have to simply use the most common tools, right? ChatGPT is a great tool, but ChatGPT has an external data set. Now, I'm sure your AI bot, you will have probably trained on your own data. And I recommend that to anyone. So we're doing something similar. We've built, my business partner calls it the tenderizer. Literally an AI bot that has been trained to sweep our internal knowledge for questions that we've had to answer over tenders before, just to expedite the process. Some tenders can take a week to write with the amount of questions they've got in it. If we can bring that down 80%, then that's a significant saving and investment in the business. From the political side, I struggle a little more there. I'm not sure that I have the answers as to how we can use that to fortify ourselves. From a Queensland perspective, I don't know about Australia as a whole. What I can say, certainly as a small business owner in Queensland, the Queensland government's quite good. So there are a bunch of grants and available training and different things you can get access to as a small business owner, particularly as you're starting. So if you're a startup, make sure you hit the Queensland website, government websites, and look for these different grants. You can find yourself, it might even be just a couple of grand, but just enough to help give you that little bit of a kick and momentum you need.
How has Queensland supported innovation for your business?
Well, look, I think Queensland government has also mandated a lot as far as government purchasing. What I've noticed in a lot of the tender or application type processes, you find that there's actually quite a good bit of waiting these days to both indigenously led businesses and also your mid and small sized businesses. So they are promoting the use of small businesses throughout the state. So I think that helps, innovation in turn because it helps you stay relevant.
So, do you think that's going to put us ahead at any point, or are we constantly playing catch up in this space around adopting technology and software into businesses?
I think Australia in general are just a tad behind technologically, some of the bigger countries, particularly like your China's and the US. We do tend to see a little bit of lag before we get the big whiz-bang new products come across. As you mentioned, we're completely isolated, and that is reflected in that to some degree. But I think businesses are adopting, at least in my space. I mean, I do work in IT, so it's kind of biased, but at least the businesses that I work with, I see are typically embracing new technology and the efficiencies that they can gain out of it. What I'd like to see though, Kim, it's our schools reflect that a little bit better. I don't think our younger generation, business, sure, that's great, focus on that, but we also need to try and increase that technology drive through our younger kids.
At what age do you think that should start?
Look, I don't see any reason it can't start from the moment they join primary school. So five, when they're in prep, just it doesn't have to be War and Peace on a tablet, but playing simple games like your reading eggs, learning your alphabet, basic numbers and math and all that sort of stuff. It's just a great way to introduce the kids to technology and familiarize them with it. As long as we maintain the balance, I think kids still need to be able to, while we don't do it commonly, you still need to be able to read and write proficiently. AI or different applications can read stuff to you verbally, sure. But it's a different feeling and a different level of empowerment than being able to do it yourself. Like, I don't want AI to read a murder mystery novel to me. It's just not going to have the same feeling that your imagination can create when you do it yourself. We are moving probably already a little bit ahead of our skis because AI is adapting so quickly. So I'm kind of hoping that that plateaus for a little bit, and we don't get too far down the track and lose what makes us humans.
Well, Brett, you've certainly given me a lot to think about today, and I appreciate you sharing all of your expertise, skills, and insights into this area. I think we'll probably need to chat again because there's always going to be something in the internet and technology space that's going to be getting attention. Thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, thank you, Kim. Lovely to talk with you today.
Co-founder and managing director of Shape IT, Brett Azzopardi, sharing his lived experience of information and technology, the digital risks, changing social dynamics, and of course, the importance of open communication with children. To discover more from Brett's blog and social media posts, follow the links in the show notes. And while you're there, connect with me via my website, kimclyden.com. And find What We Teach Our Children on socials. You can also follow me, Kim Clyden, on LinkedIn to gain clarity around profile building and digital presence. Next week, Carrie Sutton returns with deep insights into the digital child and building resilience. We'll discuss the social media risk of YouTube Kids, the Australian government's social media ban for under 16s, and device use. Until then, let's be the change we want to see in the world.